Oh, look, Gerard, it's you and me today. No David Thorpe.
No Coach Thorpe today.
Kind of fun. All right, so this is Bring It In Troops, little Zoom from home show. There's so much going on. We have an 85-page prep document.
Mm-hmm.
No chance we're going to even get meaningfully through there.
A quarter through, maybe.
I propose we open with a request from Twitter, which was that we discuss the MVP of the NBA, Nikola Jokic, being ejected for cracking somebody in the face. What are your initial thoughts here?
It's one of those things where I feel like the league has rules in its rule book. And as a, when a fan or a media person, when you watch, I think the thing that frustrates people is, well, which rules are we going to call and which rules are we not going to call? Now, by the letter of the law, this was a flagrant foul, right? Wind up, follow through, connection. It says it in the rule book. That is a flagrant foul. All right, fine, flagrant foul. But now we add all the subjective things to it. But it's the MVP. But it's an elimination game. But it's this. But it's that. And it's the same thing that we talk about, regular season versus postseason. Why do you allow this to happen in the postseason, but you don't allow this to happen in the regular season? And I think what fans, when you see Twitter reactions, what they're clamoring for is just let us know what is and what isn't, right? Consistency. And I think, yeah, but that's part of the game, right? The human error and the lack of consistency is part of what makes this a dramatic soap opera and why we like watching it.
Judy, do you mind playing? There's a YouTube link in that Nikola Jokic section. And I think it's going to be a little... Okay, so let's just look for a second here. To me, there's like a... He's trying to draw a foul on DeAndre Ayton here in a second. It's a pretty routine basketball play. And there's no call. And he looks over at the ref. And he's like, you're not going to call that? And he's like, okay, I'm going to hit this guy in the face. That's what it looks like to me. And then if you keep it playing, now he's like... I really feel like I've watched this a bunch of times now. Now he's like, I just like to start a fight. Let's just start a fight. Like, he pushes his giant chest into people for the next 10 minutes as lots of people try to pull him back. And then later he said, I wanted to change the rhythm of the game. I wanted to give us some energy. I tried to make a hard foul. Did I hit him? I didn't know. I say sorry if I did, because I didn't want to injure him or hit him in the head on purpose. He did. And then there's like actually another topic we'll talk about in a second is, then Cameron Payne's on the ground for minutes as Nuggets fans, I think drunk, high on altitude, sensing the end of their season as their team is down 83-75 with 3:52 left in the third, in the fourth game of a series they've won none. They start chanting grotesquely, MVP. What the fuck?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's just, yeah, that is, but that's the worst part of fandom though, right? Like, that's the part that's like, all right, guys, like, is it really? And again, like, it's weird, right, Henry? Because like, we all started out in this sport as fans of the game. And like, to an extent, I understand where that comes from. But then as you get older and you just like, you start covering the league and you're just like, look, it's just a game full of a lot of really complicated people who sometimes you like, sometimes you don't like, and it's just whatever. Like,
I've come to the point where when fans act like that, well, if one fan acts like that, okay, it just happens. If
right.
Two or three, whatever. But when the whole arena is
yes.
being complete heartless asshole, to me, I'm like, oh, you guys are scared.
Yeah, for sure.
You don't do that without being scared, right? The Raptors fans cheered for Kevin Durant when he tore his Achilles because they were terrified.
He had his first five shots in a row. They were like, oh, God, we're going to lose.
They needed that injury, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They were terrified. I think same with if the Nuggets were up 3-1, I don't think they'd say MVP for this play.
Definitely right? not.
Like Nuggets fans, you were done and you kind of knew it. Jokic knew it. So David wrote a story in 2019 on True Hoop, which was prescient in a bunch of ways. One of them was, he's like, Jokic has a chance to be the MVP of the NBA, which sounds commonplace now, but it wasn't commonplace on September 10th, 2019. But in that story, he goes through this little sequence where Jokic's Serbia team was down to Spain and was about to get eliminated. And Jokic, it's the words in this article are actually that he lost his mind. And he got ejected. And I feel a little bit like we saw that. Like, Jokic seems like a lovely guy. That video of him getting his MVP award, but like, that doesn't mean he's perfect, right?
Right, right.
It seems like under stress, facing elimination, constantly frustrated with
no injuries. Doubt.
He's going to do a little bit of this.
Yeah. And I think also, too, right? Let's also keep in mind, he was an Iron Man this regular season, right? Didn't miss any games, as far as I remember. And remember, they were one of the final four teams last year in the bubble. So it's a combination of intense, hyper competition in a super testosterone-driven environment, one, which is crazy. Two, I'm exhausted. We're getting our ass kicked. Again, I'm not justifying, but like these reactions are, oh, okay. I can see why that happens, right? And then the crowd, as you said, they're down 0-3. They know their season's on the brink. It's mob mentality. We all start fueling it together. We feel like this thing because Nikola Jokic is ours. He's our MVP. This is our thing. We're losing it. And now we're just going to lose our minds and start yelling MVP because this is just a collective response. Like it, in a weird way, it all makes sense, right? Like how it happens like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bummer that it happens like that. And there's a little bit of like, I haven't seen anybody say Cameron Payne was to blame for anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So he's at this point, no one knows if he's alive. Right.
They don't care.
Like, it'd be pretty weird. I mean, if he did, you know, he turned out to be okay, but you saw him like feeling his nose for a while. Yeah. Kind of like, what? You know,
my nose broken. I mean, Jokic is a big man with big hands. I'm sure like, you know, you might've thought your nose is broken at that point. It's, you know, it's just tough, Henry. Like, I don't know about you. Like you, I mean, we're roughly around the same age. You're a little bit older, but like we grew up watching like a lot of 80s basketball, 90s, and the game was a lot different then, right? A little bit less skill, a lot more physicality. And people always talk about, do we need more of that in the game? And I'm like, there's like this line, and I'm not sure what the line actually is, right? Should people be able to play hard? Absolutely. But when it gets to be non-basketball related things, I think that's when the league has to be like, all right, we can't have this. And this is obviously always something that David before Adam, and Adam is constantly concerned about, right? We can't have outright fights and things like that going in this league, right? So,
yeah, there's a, so actually David Thorpe is not here. He's being a very good husband today. I did talk to him this morning and he made this interesting point where he's like, you don't have to, I sleep with a small woman in my bed, right? He's like, if I'm not careful with my elbows, like she'll get a black eye. He's like, and I don't go to incredible amounts of trouble to not elbow her in the face. I just keep my elbows in close and we've never had an issue. Interestingly, I can't say the same thing. I did once clock my wife in the face. Like I just, David, better husband than me, I guess.
Yep.
But it's true. Like you're just, you know, you have to make sure you don't.
Yes.
Right. Jokic knows exactly what he did here. Right.
Sure.
He's a professional 100%. Athlete. There are all kinds of ways you learn to move your butt. He's a master of movement.
Yes. Right?
And he knows exactly. You could tell he was pissed off, and he
no doubt
he wanted to send a message. And you know, I don't think he needs to be arrested.
No.
Like, yeah, you get the book thrown at you.
Oh yeah, for sure. Oh, the flagrant and the toss completely justified. Like, there's no discussion about that. 100% justified.
And David was pleased that they did that to the MVP too, which didn't occur to me in real time. But I'm like, yeah, I guess that's a good thing.
Well, because, you know, that's the thing, right? People, that's always what I said before about the disclaimers to it. Oh, but this is the MVP. Oh, but it's this game. But like, again, why does a foul by one player in one portion of the game not the same as a foul by another player, right? It's either is or it's not, regardless of who commits it or who does what.
Yeah. It's a little bit easier for the NBA. Like, if people are ejected for throwing a punch in one game, they're very often suspended for the next game.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be a trickier analysis if this had happened in like game two, right?
Yes, for sure. Oh yeah. Because that's something that I don't want to make it seem like the NBA is some conspiratorial business that like, we have to watch out. We can't have this person kicked out of a game, but you know, I mean.
Only LeBron. I'm just kidding. that was a joke.
I mean, but you're not really kidding, right? I mean, think about how, I mean, if Jordan threw a punch in the game, was he ever kicked out game two? Probably not.
The NBA definitely plays some politics. Favorites.
Yes, for sure.
That doesn't mean every time that there's a bad call,
right?
Like, yes. Adam Silver ordered it. Like that's yes, correct. Not, there's no chance. There wouldn't even be the mechanism for that to happen, right? They can't reach him that fast. But the one to me, you know, like I said on the show that like they were going to keep the COVID suspension rules fuzzy because they wanted to be able to. I think I used the example of like. Bend the rules for LeBron, basically.
And we saw it.
Did.
We saw it with this tequila party. We're like, I thought you couldn't go to, this party was, I'm like, oh, how do you know that? Everybody was there. I don't think that's right.
It was so bullshit. Did anybody else get like a special waiver?
Not that I know of.
I don't think so.
It's
remember
it's
when
hilarious.
Kyrie they dropped they like remember Kyrie went to like his
Kyrie went to his sister's party birthday party and they find him and was like, I'm like, isn't that kind of the same thing? Oh, that party was outdoors. Oh, tequila party outdoors. Okay. Fair.
And I would honestly, I would if you're in some kind of place where they won't publish the rules,
right?
Like worry.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Like, you want that big board with like the, that's a good sign.
Ten things you, got it. This is, now I know.
Yeah. Oh, but I noticed. Oh, did you see? Like, that's helpful. Like.
But it's also, as you mentioned, Henry, it's part of the fandom thing, right? Like when you worry about like, oh, rules and did Adam order this? I mean, it's funny for Twitter. Everybody laughs and jokes at it. But I think, I know Adam worries about this stuff, right? Like how right. the league is perceived by people. And I'm like, well, people perceive the shenanigans go on. So, you know.
Like, this league did have Tim Donaghy. And he did call Scott Foster something like 250 times a day. And Scott Foster is reffing all these big games. And they haven't done a good explanation of why this is all fine. I'm not saying they have super clean hands here. I'm just saying that, like, they didn't rate it to get Steph versus LeBron. Like,
right.
Bye-bye.
Well, we could also talk about the other conspiracy floating around, although quieter, in that Bucks-Nets game 4. Three referees who every fan base knows all officiating the same game. Scott Foster, Tony Brothers, and Ed Malloy. I'm like, what are the chances that all three of those dudes are doing the same game? That, like, never happens.
We're due for some transparency on the referee thing, right? Like, I just, I'm going to assume that everything's not rigged unless proven otherwise. But like, in the meantime, it's like, I'm open-minded.
I can be convinced.
I want to see the evidence. I wouldn't do it just on like, I have a lot of friends who call me up with like, of course we lost because blank. And it's like, you can go look up those records, like this team, that ref. And like, it doesn't hold up. Like,
correct.
It doesn't. All Tim Donaghy's claims in his book, like horse shit. Like we looked up, we did the work.
Did the work. It doesn't hold up.
He's a liar. He's a terrible, terrible liar. He's like the most lying liar I've ever come across.
The most lying liar.
All right, let's talk. It's gonna be a good day, Gerard. I can already tell.
I like it.
Okay. We should talk about the Nets and the Bucks. We might never move on. It's really. There's a lot going on in that series all of a sudden.
So much.
I'm so smart about basketball that I told you when we talked on Friday that like, oh, give me a break. The Bucks are done. Like all kind of talk. And then like, or it's 2-2. And I think we'd all pick the Bucks as favorites now, right? Like,
probably. Well, it's wild, right? Judy, if you can, in the dot, I have the 538 graphic of chances and percentages of winning the title. And Henry, it's so crazy how things, and it's, we know this, and I think it's a tough thing, and I know you've read stuff about this before, how human beings, like, I think we're really bad at processing change, like, in the moment as it's happening, right? Like, we have a million hours and years of data that tell us 2-0 means nothing. Like, how many series have gone 2-0 and then 2? It happens all the time. But, on Friday, it was, oh, this series is over. We were already penciling the Nets into the conference finals, and then it's like, oh, they lose a game 3 nail biter, and then Kyrie steps on an ankle, and then oh no, now it's 2-2 when the series is completely flipped. Like, it's just, this is sport. But again, as I mentioned before, this is why we tune in and why we watch, is because we think it may be over, but it's still one of the great dramas that it might not be. Now, it's unfortunate that twisted ankles and injuries are reasons why things change, but it's part of the game, and this series is fascinating now on a variety of different levels.
Yeah, I there's so much to get to. One little note, as a favor to the absent David Thorpe, I looked up how many passes the Bucks had. Mm-hmm. This has been a theme for him. They were 196 and 214 in their last two games. This is what you see on your TV when that's happening, is Giannis with the ball.
Yes.
like this is what you see. Mm-hmm. You see Blake Griffin getting in his little crouch, and that's the game. That's what they do. And people are basically saying Mike Budenholzer is the worst coach in the history of the game. However, in game 4, 245 passes, which is a lot more than 196, and it looked different. And interestingly, that's about their playoff average.
Mm-hmm.
It's also about the Nets. We're about to stay at 246 in the last game, which means that this like Giannis hero ball thing is just not what they were ever about. It's just right. What they did in a little panic moment.
Yeah, I think as we talked about a little bit last week, the Nets switching defense kind of baited them into a lot of that, right? And series are all about adjustments, but we also talk about coaches making adjustments. Well, players see what's happening too, and they go, oh, they've been doing this for four games now. I think I get it, right? Like, I processed, here's what we're going to do now. And I think part of it too for the Bucks was they started hitting some shots. And it's always interesting to go, which one came, the chicken and egg thing, right? Is it, I've done this, and this is the graphic I was telling you about. 2 weeks ago, the Nets were on top of this list as chance of winning the finals at 30-some percent. They've now dropped to four at 15%. This is how fast things change in this league. So is it the Bucks made a couple threes, and now, ooh, pass. And before when they were bricking, oh no, I got to figure out how to get us through this thing.
Jared, do you, and we want to talk a lot more about this, but really fast, looking at the graphic, that has Suns, in this order of likely to win the championship, Suns, Jazz, 76ers, Nets, Bucks, Clippers, Hawks. Does that sound about right to you?
I mean, as it stands right now, given what we know, this seems right. This seems right today. Now, guess what? That could change by Wednesday, right? Yeah. Like, but today, on Monday, it sounds right.
You know what? So we have a lot of fancy tools to predict things, including that thing we just looked at. And as is Vegas. And in Vegas betting, that order we just saw was nothing like it. Like, before going into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And Vegas betting, not without reason, tends to really favor superstars.
Yes.
Right? LeBron, Steph, they jump way up these lists. This is a year where those first four teams are 1 and 2 seeds. Mm-hmm. Like, suddenly we're like, oh, just stupid. Yeah. The dumbest measure of all. What was your regular season record?
Yeah.
Pretty good. Pretty good predictor this year.
It's interesting, though, Henry, too, because playoffs, when you think about it, are a relatively small sample size, right? Versus the regular season. But there are factors that make the two sets of data points very different, right? Number one being you don't get to play Charlotte was better this year, but Cleveland, all those shitty teams, Minnesota, right? Those people are eliminated. One, two, players give a shit more come playoff time, right? Like in terms of defense and following structure. And then three, the nature of I'm playing the same team at a minimum four times in a row. So there's no surprises of, oh, what? No. I know everything you're going to do now. The attention to detail is different. So it's always interesting to use one metric as a comparison point versus another when it's the games are a little bit different, right? And what's happening, the ingredients in those pots are different. That's always fascinating to me.
Yeah, and there's a, I think, you know, the by and large, I think this has been studied quite a lot. Like the regular season's a good, not great predictor of play performance. But the exception is teams that have won titles tend to coast a little more. So they tend to bump it up a little in the playoff. Like, and I think you can just make teams with LeBron kind of fit that, whether that team has won a title or not. But this looks like not one of those years, right? This looks like, the Suns haven't won a title, but they're number one on that list.
And it's beautiful with the Suns, Henry, because remember where we were a week and a half ago? Oh, man, Chris's shoulder's falling off, like, they may not get past the Lakers. Now, with the sweep of the Nuggets and maybe Clippers Jazz goes long, this is, I mean, again, and it's not, I'm not trying to give the Suns no credit. It's just timing. We swept a team that was really injured. Now we're going to have a week plus off, which is only good for a 36-year-old Chris Paul, right? Like, this is helpful for you. And now you're healthy going into the playoffs. By the way, True TV, I did make a video about the Suns saying they've got every element you need to go to the NBA Finals.
Well, and detouring to this, we've got so much to talk about this, but the Nuggets had flaws, and my beloved Trailblazers have like better players. I'm doing air quotes, but couldn't really make them pay, right? And this is where, like, you know, Thorpe wrote a story for us in the middle of the season about how the Suns were succeeding, and it was about like basically coordinated teamwork on offense, which sounds pretty basic, but is actually pretty extraordinary.
Yes.
And hard to find in this year's NBA playoffs. That's how they would put MPJ, you know, we love MPJ, but they would put him in
pick and roll every time.
Well, and not just pick and roll, but like various situations where the Blazers were like, oh, we'll just ISO him. That's not how you come up with his weaknesses the best.
Correct.
Right. And on and on. I feel like this is where the Suns are interesting this year, because I think players might be the best they've ever been at basketball. But this, you know, like that when the U.S. lost to Greece in the World Championships a decade ago, they just ran a bunch of ISOs and it seemed like this was the big problem. And David at that time was like, it's fine. Like you, ISO's a good offense against when you have this talent discrepancy, it's fine. But now, like at this stage of the playoffs, nobody has a talent discrepancy.
Correct.
And this isn't a good strategy anymore. And that's where the Suns, I think, are a little bit ahead of the game. Jazz too.
Oh, yeah. Jazz have a bunch of options and weapons, and they run this beautiful kind of system, right? Like, like nice, Greg, nice.
But if you're really into facts and stuff, which we're not so into here, it turns out that the U.S. lost to Greece 17 years ago. No, that's not right.
Well,
I don't think that's right.
2004, yeah.
Is that really right? Because
04 Olympics, yeah. Yeah, that was Athens. Yep. Listen, it's fine. We were young back then, Henry. It's fine.
No. Here's my problem. Troop didn't exist in 2005. And I talked to Thorpe about this game when it happened. So what the hell?
Did you not know Thorpe before?
No.
Well, Henry, you
I don't know what's happening.
Reprogram the brain because something happened. You got a malfunction on the motherboard.
Oh, dude, I got a bunch of malfunctions. All right. There's no argument. Tell me something I don't already know.
All right, let's go back to this Bucks Nets series. But I think the point you brought up about the teamwork and the ISO is fascinating. And you want to talk about that. Even without James Harden, when Kyrie was there, even the Rock
Fight
game.
I was right, Gerard.
Yes.
Greg, thank you. 2006.
You were good.
Changes everything.
Malfunction working again. even with Harden out, even the first three games, even that Rock Fight game in game three,
yeah.
The Nets were doing beautiful things, right?
Yeah.
Everybody connected, string moving, whatever. Okay, cool. Irving goes down in the middle of the game. And I think this is something you and I talked about on the phone about Giannis. And it happens, I think, with every one of these superstar players, right? Instinctually, their brain just goes back to, well, no one's here. I got to do this. And also, their teammates start going, yeah. That's what we got to do. And, and you know, no. That ain't going to work. Keep doing what you've been doing, even with the lesser talent, because five is always better than one, right? And I think that's what we saw late in game four in that Nets Bucks series.
So that was a really interesting game. There were a lot of things happening, but I just, you know, and it was kind of a PJ Tucker game. I was like, this guy was everywhere. I mean, he's a friend of Kevin Durant's.
They're very close.
Physical defender, and with your referee crew, he seemed to be getting away with
lot of fouling.
And he was doing that thing where he's like, they're not going to call me for five fouls every possession. So I'm just
right. So I'm going to foul him five times every possession.
And did you see his face when they called him a now and again for foul? He's like, What? It's like, dude, they could have called.
As my friend from the Undefeated says, let's be honest. PJ Tucker fouls Kevin Durant every single possession. And he does every time.
But in a crafty way,
the refs can't call it every time. Him.
Yeah. So PJ Tucker's everywhere, and he's determined, and it's a good underdog strategy. He's a player who was traded midseason, possibly to no effect. Now suddenly he's super important, right? This is like game four. His team's down 2-1, and he's like kind of the MVP. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Durant is a proud guy who got a little pissed off, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I'll show you how we handle PJ Tucker. And in the middle of the first quarter, he ISOs against him and PJ forces him baseline. David Thorpe teaches baseline is death for this reason, which is it makes it very easy for the help defense, and Bobby Portis crushes it, right?
Yep.
Next possession, I'm pretty sure next possession, they do it again. KD does some magical KD stuff, but ends up putting the ball into the foam on the side of the backboard, which you don't see KD do very often. And I just, in my head, I'm like, you know, the Nets have so many ways to score. It's the best offense of all time. But I'm like, but this particular thing?
Not the way to do it.
This doesn't seem like it's going to be the program. Yeah.
I agree. But I think, Henry, that's what's so interesting, though, right? Because it's the game within the game.
Yeah.
Because Steve Nash will tell you this. No. Kevin Durant isolation is a good thing. And we know all the numbers say points per possession isolation. He's one of the greatest of all time in the history of basketball, right? But in that situation, in that scenario, not a good idea, right? Like, it's when and where you use the isolation. And I think, you know, we saw the difference in game two and in game four. Game two, the refs weren't letting PJ Colt get away with those fouls. He had two fouls in the first 5 minutes. Yeah, that strategy then becomes neutralized. Then KD isolation works because I know I can't be as physical. So, but that's on you as the player and the team to know they're not calling that. Okay, we got to do something different. Let's go back to Bruce Brown floaters, more running, more plays for Joe Harris popping threes. Joe Harris, by the way, who needs to be playing a lot better in this series.
It's a little weird. I mean, almost like, I'm like, dude, just stop shooting twos. Like, you can't do that. Just go shoot.
Stop shooting twos.
Something about that. I mean, I don't know. I feel like when he's catches the ball behind the 3-point line, like, I feel like it's a very practiced thing for him.
Yes.
But they're giving him a lot of weird kind of mid-range opportunities. And like, that just, mm-hmm. I'm nervous about that. I'm nervous.
Well, if you're nervous, what's he? Jeez.
Yeah. But if he just if he just reverts to normal, then that's fine.
You know? Yes. Pretty much.
So this thing happens where they're like, betting the farm on KD seems a little iffy, and then Kyrie gets hurt in the next quarter. You sent me Brian Suterer, MD, who has a cringeworthy video. Here he is. Mm-hmm. This guy's amazing. Really breaking down that thing that is called the ATFL, that green ligament in the front there. That's what we're worried about with Kyrie. He isolates a part in the video where you can see, he shows it like five times, and I find it a little cringeworthy where Kyrie's ankle is at a complete 90-degree angle.
Yep. That is, so, you know, you're looking at ankle injuries there, right? And the big thing is, you know, and Brian Suterer details it based on what he's seen, the difference between a regular low ankle sprain versus a high ankle sprain, which is what LeBron had, right? From everything we've seen and what the medical professionals are saying, it looks like a low ankle sprain. What's going to be important now, however, Henry, as you know, is what happened in the 24 hours since that situation, which, by the way, Kyrie got into a compressed tube 40,000 feet above the ground and flew back to Brooklyn, which, as we know, does not do wonders for any ligaments that have any kind of pain or swelling issues, right? So we'll see how it looks this morning and how it feels this morning. Obviously, he's getting more imaging done today, and it's really going to be about, okay, because Nash said last night, experts were negative. Well, that's all well and good last night. The issue is today, what kind of swelling do we have? Do we need to do any more imaging to see what really is going on inside these ligaments, right? If it's a low grade and it's just a grade one sprain, that's anywhere from days to weeks, right? So days, which, well, we only got one day in between the game. So that to me means likely not playing game five, right? Because that's only one day in between. And it's about pain management at that point. And what is the strength level of the ankle? And this is something I know from work that I've done and talking to the Nets performance staff and people around there. Their big thing is, yes, and Brian Suterer mentioned this, most players come back from ankle injuries and the ligaments inside aren't even healed yet. That's only one piece of it. The other piece of it is, are the corresponding areas around that are requisite for that ankle to work, are they still having the same level of strength as they did before the injury? Well, it just happened 24 hours ago. So by game five, there's no way that could be true. Just time, 2 days, it's not physically possible. But the problem we have is the playoffs. We have X amount of games that end at a finite time, right? Are we going to play? Are we not going to play? And this is the push-pull that you have with athletes, training staff, the future, you know, the longevity of your career, et cetera. And it's a dangerous situation to be in.
These Nets stars are ballers, which I mean, obviously, they're fucking ballers. But I also mean that they both express like they prefer to work out by playing the sport.
Yes.
Right. This is like a definitional to Kevin Durant, but also like, you know, Kyrie's the guy who would stay 2 hours after practice working on like wrong foot floaters and, which, you know, maybe doesn't matter, but I've gotten a little bit of religion that like basketball isn't the best preparation for basketball because it's A, too hard on you, but B, too easy on you. It's too easy on you in like cardio and strength building. Which occurred to me, A, the way Kyrie went down, lots of players land on feet, but not every ankle has quite that mobility, right? Like if you were a total gym bunny, if you were just the dude doing the squats all the time, like that's not how your ankle goes. Like,
no.
And I would tell you this other thing occurred to me in this game, which is when Giannis was 17, he looked just like KD did mm-hmm. when KD was 17. They were both mm-hmm. like as lean as people get. I mean, God knows how Giannis got to look the way he looks now. Like,
but, and we'll leave it at that.
The man is built for sustaining this kind of stress, right?
Yes.
And there was a moment where I forget exactly the play, but KD and Giannis met at like peak jump later in the mm-hmm. game. And I think Giannis was attacking the rim and KD was trying to stop him and fouled him. And Giannis just landed on 2 feet and did like a little kind of like victory dance and mm-hmm. KD crumpled in a pile.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these are those moments where being a baller isn't quite the same as being like, you know, like Giannis is the guy they have to lock the gym because mm-hmm. he will want to lift on off days. Right? Like, I think there's like a little bit of like bummer that both of your stars are and the other guy too prefer to prepare by playing.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because we've talked to enough sports science people to know, Henry, that they all, to a man and woman, say NBA basketball, 2 maximum loads in a seven-day period. That is what all of them say. And that's not what we do. We do 3 to 4 in a 7-day span, which is not good, right? Like, because you need time for recover, strength building, strength training, all those things so that you can do what Giannis is doing. What I think is interesting about him, though, I don't know if you remember, Henry, when Giannis first came into the league, his 3-point shot looked a lot smoother and more efficient than it looks now. Yeah, and I'm wondering, and I wonder how much of it is I got so superhuman that now I don't have the requisite fluidity and nimbleness to let that ball snap. I mean, I saw these old clips. I'm like, that's a 40% 3-point shooter with that stroke. What happened to this guy? So, you know,
I did this story years ago where I ended up spending like a day with Jason Kidd at his house with his babies and stuff. And his Pilates instructor. And she was saying that basically her work with Jason Kidd who at that point was a terrible shooter. That basically he'd done heavy weights above his head. Her position was you should not use heavy weights above your head. I don't think everyone agreed with her on that, but she was basically just trying to repair 15 years of ruining his shoulder mobility. And she would use all kinds of clever stuff to do that. And he became a really good shooter. Mm-hmm. Like I think he finished his career like top 10 in threes made. But I think those things that this shoulder just being super jacked doesn't really help. I
don't help shooting.
Yeah. And actually I think David Thorpe, we should ask him about this, but he will tell you that in his son's Florida State program, which is leads the ACC in 3-point shooting. They're very careful about upper body weights. Like
it makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, actually the one other thought I had, well, let's talk about it now. Okay. So assuming Kyrie doesn't play
mm-hmm.
KD against the world, like how's this going to go? What do you envision from the Nets?
So what they need to do is run the system where they go, okay, they're going to load up to KD. So our guys, our Bruce Browns, our Joe Harris's, our Jeff Green's, everybody else, you've got a space, right? And you guys have got to shoot and knock down shots of confidence because you're going to get open looks. Right, because they're gonna load to KD, and KD will pass you the ball, right? Like, and I think on both ends. So one, when that happens, he's got to be strong and direct with his passing, and they have got to be aggressive. I don't care if you missed your first 7 floaters, Bruce Brown. You got to keep doing that shit because it's going to pay dividends eventually throughout the game. I think that's how they have to run it, right? Where it's like, you know, you put the most shooting you can around him, kind of like LeBron did in those Cavs days, right? Everyone who can shoot to space the floor is out there. Now, we're going to sacrifice a little bit on D, but we can go up, I think, and get into that little bit more of that, that little more pace running the game that way. And then defensively, still do your switching, and maybe it'll start coaxing the Bucks back into that, you know, oh, let's just isolate on these guys because they suck at, you know, at defense. And that, you know, you'll get some misses that way, because while the Bucks can isolate, they're not great in isolation. They're much better doing what they did in the first half.
They have Mike D'Antoni on that bench who ran the James Harden Rockets offense, which I Correct. Guess is kind of the model here.
Mm-hmm. And Mike D'Antoni also, and Steve Nash, I would say those two are among the more brilliant offensive minds in the game. And with knowing that you're not going to have Kyrie, which they already probably know, they can, okay, here's, this lineup works. You know, they're talking, what if we space here, put this guy in the corner, and then everybody cuts hard and do what they do. Coach Hubie Brown and Coach Thorpe brings this up all the time. Why do you set screens? Like, force defense thing. Just make the defense think. As I said on Friday, yes, stopping Kevin Durant in isolation is probably among the hardest things to do on a basketball court, right? Because he's so good at basketball. But if you know that it's coming every single time, your chances of succeeding will improve. So do that when you want to do it, not when they want you to do it.
The other thing I'm noticing is, like, when you're a little older, you can do brilliant things, but you can't carry that load every possession.
Correct.
Right? And Kevin Durant's a post-Achilles tear player, right?
Yes.
Who's never been, you know, he's not the Giannis gym guy, right?
No.
And so to me, I'm like, I wonder how much, well, A, James Harden was the primary ball handler in this offense in Houston. Probably not the right role for KD here, right? If nothing else, just because it's so exhausting. Mm-hmm. But so now I'm like, how many, hey, who is the primary ball handler, I guess? So is this a Mike James situation?
It's going to have to be Mike James, right? And this is what's so fascinating about injury, Henry. Like, when the Denver Nuggets got Aaron Gordon, we were like, ooh, right? Because he is the fourth best player on that healthy team. That is money for you. Oh, but if Aaron Gordon and Nikola Jokic are out, well, shit. Now you're the second most important player on offense. That ain't good, right? For your long-term playoff success. Same thing for the Nets. Mike James, these are luxuries to have. Well, now you don't have James Harden and Kyrie Irving. Everyone has to bump up two slots and do more than they're capable of doing, because if they weren't NBA starters and NBA All-Stars, they would already have been that in their career, right? Especially these guys, because they're older. So now everyone has to do a little bit more than what they normally would have to do. And that puts stress on you because you're not used to doing that. Look, Campazzo's a great story. 40 minutes of Campazzo, not good for your team. As we saw,
they got sweat. It was great against the Blazers.
Your poor Blazers. Your poor Blazers.
I think he's probably the MVP, if we're honest. Let's be honest. That's the only explanation that kind of computes for me. Like, Campazzo's the best player in the history of the game.
Oh, my God. No, you know what your team's problem is. You guys just can't guard anybody. That's, I mean, that's your issue.
We chose not to, Gerard, all right? Don't talk to me about what they can do. Like, they just didn't want to.
And I thought it was interesting. Nash, in the game on Sunday, yesterday, he pretty much went away, sat Blake most of the second half.
Yeah.
He was already doing that calculus in his mind. I'm going to need you to play 38 minutes on Tuesday. So, yeah, you're sitting tonight, and we might punt this game.
The other thing I like, this is true. Almost every championship team, you can go and find a player on the roster, or at least one, who every team could have had, but 29 teams rejected, basically. Mm-hmm. Like Mike James, yep. PJ Tucker. There's going to be some of that, right? Like, yep. There are going to be important contributions, Campazzo, like somewhere around on every good team, which is, or wait, the Suns guard. I'm having a senior moment.
Who Jay Crowder? China.
What's that?
Jay Crowder?
No. Did Cameron Payne play in China?
Yes, Cameron Payne. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you got hit in the face. Welcome to the NBA.
but I think to your point, that's correct, Henry. But if you are the team with those people, you want to employ them how you want to use them, not how injuries force you to use them, right? Like 40 minutes of Mike James might not be optimal, right? Yeah. Like,
well, I think there's also the, you know, you want to create situations where they can do what they're good at, right? Which is, you know, this is the chess game. Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to. There was a moment where Pat Connaughton got clocked in the face.
Yes.
And he's bloody. And the second it happened, he had to go to the locker room.
I think the stitches. Yep.
Second it happened, Mike Breen, who's a lovely guy, really like him, immediately says, "Of course, it was inadvertent." And he always does that. Commentators often do. And yes. I think I know why. I have a theory as to why. But that's just unknowable.
Yeah, correct. Right. Correct. You cannot know whether it was inadvertent or not. And then Connaughton saying, nothing. Look at my face. It's bloodied. I do wonder, right? Like, from video, we're all amateur body language reader. I mean, this is what you do when you watch as much NBA and you go to games. What did Joe Harris intend to smack him in the face and make his eye bloody? I have no idea. I mean, I don't think so. It's not a boxing match, but I can't say inadvertent, but I think that's just sort of, that's the crutch you fall back on. One, and
it's actually
two,
a lot like the Jokic play, to be honest. It's pretty similar.
And two, you don't ever want to present to your public that, you know, viewing that, you know, this is something other than basketball, right? Again, Adam and the league very concerned about image, and you don't ever want to present out that these guys are, you know, throwing punches and fighting and doing anything but playing basketball. So that's a lot of reason why commentators say what they say.
You can't
this look, man's this leaking.
Yeah, I can guarantee you from firsthand experience that if you spend a lot of time in meetings with league officials, like that point you just made, like they are, like they believe, like that the Malice in the Palace could have ended the league, right? If this league, which is aspiring to be basically the blackest famous thing in America, right? Mm-hmm. If white America sees it as people who fight all the time, mm-hmm. they think they're done, right?
Yep.
And so there's always an impulse to downplay the notion of fighting. You know, this is why they have that very hardcore can't leave the bench rule.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is why, here's a fun little game. Think about what would make a good kind of award-winning type NBA photograph, right? And now note that you can search all day on Getty Images and you won't find any photographs of anybody fighting. Like, it just doesn't happen. They're scrubbed off.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the people who do the scrubbing, right? Like, it's for real. Yeah. Like, they just don't want this to be a fighting league. And so I think that Mike Breen, bless him, like has been in a million meetings with important people mm-hmm. who have subtle ways of implying like, yeah. you know, this, not that. And the downside of it is it just creates this absurd situation where like, well, now I'd like to bring up, I couldn't find the video of it. Did anybody notice the really dirty Reggie Jackson foul the other day?
Yeah.
He reached his hand into another man's private area
mm-hmm.
and then did something mm-hmm. and left it there for way longer than could possibly be inadvertent. And then I forget who it was now, just got super alarmed and wanted to come over to Jackson. Here's the story I was reminded of. Chris Kamen had an outburst and I think I ejected from a game years ago and then told the story that his testicles had been pulled. Right. And it was really fun for 48 hours. We talked about pulling testicles in the NBA and how funny is the world. That's what happened. But Reggie Jackson, I'm pretty sure, did that on camera the other day. And like, or this Jokic foul. Mm-hmm. I just think there's like a lot of dirty stuff happens at this level of the game, especially in the playoffs. Like, we have to let that be because it might well explain what happens next. Right. Yeah. If we say that was inadvertent, then when someone punches Reggie Jackson, we're all confused.
Yeah. Oh, makes sense. I wonder, Henry, it's this, you know, it's Adam and the league and David before him not trusting its audience enough to be okay and comfortable with what it sees. Now, I know why they feel that way. Like, I get it, right? Like, as you said, the NBA is the black league. Regardless of however many black people there are in the other sports, the NBA is the black league. And its majority fan base is white. And the NBA is constantly worried about that dynamic, right? How do I continually sell this product that is black to a white consumer base? And there's a belief that they feel, as you so well point out, they don't want to see fighting, anything aggressive. So there's all these, the dress code, all these tamped down things to just, in many ways, neuter, right, things and just make it just sterile and safe so that, you know, again, white people feel comfortable. And I think you can trust your audience enough to be like, we know what we're seeing. Because to be honest, the people who would complain about this aren't watching the NBA anyway, in my estimation, right? So I think they can handle, oh yeah, of course he went to go punch that guy in the face. He just kicked him in the nuts 2 minutes ago. Like, it makes sense to me. That's what I would do, right? So I think people can handle it. But I think, you know, you got to kind of, you know, you got to let people, give people a little bit more credit. A little.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Stern took over an unpopular league and then used a certain kind of Disney inspired playbook to make mm-hmm. everybody a Disney character. Right. And you just can't have people shipping each other in Disneyland.
No, that is not good.
That's not how it works.
Mickey, yeah, maybe Mickey shiving Donald in Magic Kingdom. The kids wouldn't like that.
I mean, it would probably get pretty good ratings as a TV show, though, to be honest, right? Like, come on. Like, people would watch that.
I mean, people probably would watch it.
Like, oh, Dopey got him in the corner. Like, ah! Everybody get your frozen pineapple. It's delicious. There's also like this year when they're throwing popcorn at Russell Westbrook, mm-hmm. and when Cameron Payne's down and everyone's cheering MVP, mm-hmm. is a little bit of a year of like tripling down on the idea that the players are impervious to pain or not deserving of like, mm-hmm. you know, sympathy. And that reminded me a little bit of Malice in the Palace, because, you know, and right when that was a very confusing thing to see, right? There's so many actors and so mm-hmm. many things happening, and definitely was a problem.
Yeah,
definitely was upsetting. Sure. Everybody felt scared, but like, what do you do to prevent it? And there are a bunch of people weighing in, but one of the immediate responses was that they should have, like European soccer has, the protected bench, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is basically a bet that the fans are going to be assholes yeah. and throw things. And it'll prevent whatever would ensue, mm-hmm. right? Which is exactly what Malice in the Palace was, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't do that. So like basically the players saw the whole thing and generally felt like we need to be safer. And the NBA was like, you need to wear a button down.
You need to wear a button
down. That's literally
what they That'll did. Fix the whole problem.
They literally brought in like a right-wing consultant, and he said yeah. to the players, basically they were like, we're scared white people will be turned off. And they're like, put them all in button downs. It'll be great. Yeah. Like,
respectability politics, right? On full display. And that's what it was. And of course it's ridiculous in every possible way. And I think that's sort of the challenge of the league, right? What makes basketball so much more intimate than the other sports is the closeness, right? How you yeah. can be up and you can see them, but it's yeah. like, yeah, but you're not part of this though. Like you don't get to touch them. You don't get to enter. No, you stay where you are. And I think that's the challenge, right? Do we change the arena settings, right? Push the seats back. And it's like, well, that's courtside. That's the whole point of paying $1 million and seeing Jack Nicholson and Denzel Washington and whoever. Well, and those guys aren't the ones causing trouble, but it's like, we need to figure out something whereby players feel that they're safe and fans cannot intrude on what they're doing. And you still have that intimate feeling, and that's your challenge.
Wait, didn't Drake get in a little trouble for like touching Nick Nurse or something? Or
oh well, Drake's always behind the coaches and like, you know, just wilding out. Like, I'm like, yeah, Drake, you may own like Toronto in your mind, but like when yeah. a game's happening, probably that's, you know, you go over here just
I do feel like, you know, I like the vision of the NBA as a big happy family, and everyone's going to trust each other, and we don't have to have a protective bubble or whatever the hell. Terrible things happen overseas, right?
Oh,
and
really horrible.
Like, but you know, if I'm Cameron Payne's mom today, I'm like, yeah, could you, like, I don't feel yeah. great about
yeah.
20,000 people screaming MVP yeah. after this dude just punched yeah. my son in the face. Like, yeah. that's a little worrisome as yeah. moms go, you know?
100% these moms all worry about that. Like,
yeah.
because no matter who they are, that's their baby, right? Like, I get it. Like, but it's not, it's also, but it's fan culture, and it's what we valorize. Like, and when you show highlights and like, right, it's, and I get it. The fans are crucial for the game to be what it is from a multi-billion dollar perspective, right? But, and that's warped the sense of feeling of, well, how much as a fan input and how much of this belongs to me? And it's like, well, none of it really belongs to you, right? Like none of it, like
absolutely none of it. Yeah.
It's discretionary income. You don't have to spend it on this thing. None of your money or time has to be spent to this. You choose to do that. And if you choose to do that, this is the contract you're entering into with us. You don't participate. You don't throw, right? That should be basic sort of like, you know, relationship, but we kind of don't have that.
Well, when people disagree, or I'm very happy that it's vocal. That's a win, right? It's if we can just like verbally disagree, fine. It's more just like if you're reading the mood, you know, somewhere between how Russell Westbrook reacted to the popcorn thing and mm-hmm. like somewhere I'm like, who could really argue to Russell Westbrook that he has nothing to worry about here? Like it feels a little, it's like yeah. we're, this post-Trump
kind yes. of
thing yes. feels a little different.
I didn't read the whole or listen to the whole thing, but Howard Bryant of Meadowlark and ESPN was on Howard Beck's SI podcast. And Howard said that this is a direct reflection to a lot of the NBA's political stances, Black Lives Matter, which is not political, but a lot of the stances that the NBA was taking in a Trump world. And he felt that that was backlash, right? From a lot of fans being like, you guys say this, no, this is what we matter. And it's like, you can see that. There's for sure an element of that. If you've ever been to a game and been anywhere near a fan who's done something like that, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand where a lot of that comes from. Because you can, because it's never they walk in the arena and do the thing right away. It builds throughout the game. And if you listen to what they're saying, you're like, oh, I get it. This is not about this actual person. It's about what you think that person represents in a whole larger issue, right? And you can see it. And it's, but that's kind of where we are right now.
And there's a little bit of, I've written a little bit about Fox News, whatever. I think it, like, us versus them kind of programming, we are descendants of people who went to war, right? Like, and I think it does create this idea that there are some people who's like if the bridge of some noses is broken, it's not a problem at all.
Right.
Which is not, it's kind of an alarming position for me to hear. I'm just like, no, that Cameron Payne's nose, this part of his nose, like it matters. I want him to be able to breathe and
yes.
Whatever, all that stuff. Right. Like, and I think there's a little bit of like a whipped up media based frenzy right now of like, no, they're bad guys. And for bad guys, none of that matters. And it's right. Like, no, I think we're going to have to reattach the old empathy train here a little bit.
Correct. Know? Humanity. see the humanity in everyone. Right. Like that's, we're all people, right? Like at the end of the day, we're all people.
Okay, you found an interesting point about the future of the NBA.
This is so interesting, Henry. So Bob Costas did this monologue at the end of the 98 finals when the Bulls won their sixth title, Michael Jordan, blah, blah, the whole nine. And he said, you know, this is like the last time we might see this team, right? And we knew the breakup was imminent. They actually had a lockout the next year in 99. And Bob said the future of the league is, you know, we're not going to see these sort of teams where they're dynastic. Look at the Utah Jazz, Karl Malone and John Stockton, teammates for 10 plus years. And all the, you know, Jerry Sloan, longest tenured coach in the NBA, all these different data points. And it started having me thinking, because you and I talk about the future of the league all the time. And I read these interesting articles about ratings dropping and I'm like, what is the future of this league? Because in my mind right now, and I think you agree with this, the league has never been more skilled than it is today. Like, that's just a fact. Everybody is, and there's so much good talent all over the league, but it's nowhere near as popular as it probably should be. Now, part of that is because, of course, there's more options to do, right? There's just many more things to do than there were in the 90s. And I think when people hanker back to the 90s, I think that may be where the nostalgia is coming from. Not so much the 80 to 82 games. Like, I don't think it's that. It's sports made me feel a certain kind of way at a certain time. And for whatever reason, that nostalgic feeling is not there now. Now, you can argue, well, players don't stay with one team for 15 years. You don't draft them, whatever. There's player movement. And these are the consequences of all the things that we think are good for the players, but they wane in why the regular everyday person enjoys watching sports, right? Because the casual is who they're aimed at. And I just thought Bob's points were just so dead on and poignant, even down to the point, Henry, that we don't even have that anymore. Like, you know, when NBA and NBC came on, here's a dun, 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 like the whole, you were like, oh, this game is big. And Steve Stafford, Jones, whoever would make it seem like this is the most important thing in the world right now. I mean, 2 days ago, it was, Bucks are getting swept. And that's right. We just flip flop and forth so easily. You don't have that same sense of feeling. And I just thought that that was a really interesting thing that Bob had said.
Yeah. It's really fun to be in a crowd, right? Like, it's a great feeling. It's, you know, whether at a rock concert or a basketball game or whatever else. And I do think that's gotten trickier, right? And on the one hand, when that music went off, like, everyone in the world was, well, in America at least, was hearing that music at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like, no, you're watching it when you need to watch it. And I'm the most guilty of this. Like, I almost never watch it live. Like, I just, it takes too long. And when I'd go to games, right, I was lucky enough that, like, my dad could sometimes get tickets to NBA games, and I got to go, I don't know, a dozen times when I was a kid. And, like, and in the stands, they're like, I literally would hug strangers. And, you know, if it's a good game, you're hugging it. Like, that's a great thing. And I think it's just, like, now that person is, you know, probably politically very different from me. Whatever. Like, there's just so many complications to, like, being – feeling part of a big crowd now, right? Mm-hmm. Or honestly, another one is daily fantasy, right?
Yeah,
like Like, people are rooting for their team, not our team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it does feel like that. I miss that feeling of being in a crowd, too. Or the other one is, I haven't been to a lot of live music lately for certain reasons.
Obvious reasons.
I did go with my son a couple of years ago to a big arena concert, and everybody's on their phone.
Yeah, yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah, as I said when I started the show, we're so bad at sort of recognizing change while it happens. Like, this is the thing. Like, it's happening in front of us and we don't know how to quite react to it. Everything is just different now. It's the phones, it's gambling, it's daily fantasy, it's the player movement. And again, which I'm all for all these things. But how do we make it so that it continues to be a product that people, and maybe it's not, maybe that nostalgia feeling won't be there. I mean, I'm sure for you, those 90s Blazers teams with Duckworth, Drexler, like Terry Porter, those may have been probably your favorite Blazer teams, right? Like, just because those guys were there forever and you love them. Even though they didn't win, they went to the finals. Like, I don't, like, as much as you love Dame now and all that, it probably doesn't feel the same way for you. I don't want to speak for you, but, you know.
Well, I'm pretty big on this this research that shows that basically when you're 10 or 11 years old, you determine what you think is, like, the thing you're going to be a fan of the most, right? So, you think about what was popular music when you're 10 or 11, what was popular food, whatever. Like, you just, your heart's open in a certain way. And, you know, like, I've been doing this for a while now where I, like, you know, someone's in, let's say you find a Lakers fan in San Francisco. This was an actual, an Uber driver. And I'm like, basically, like, how old are you? And you can, like, do the math. Like Magic Johnson was in the finals when he was 10. And that's why he's a Lakers fan. It tends to work. But I think this is just I think a lot of it's that, right? Like,
yeah.
Everybody who was 10 when Michael Jordan was the best player in the world, like, thinks today's NBA doesn't measure up, right? Because that's what they want. They want to look like that, right? Like, well, that's hard.
We don't actually want the basketball to look like that, if we're being honest.
Well, they do want, I think what they want is everybody to not work out in a serious way except for one dude. And then it looks like amazing.
Yes. The hero complex, right? Like, we need a singular hero to be the I will save everyone. And we have lots of heroes in the NBA. Too many.
But what do you think about this? I wonder if a little bit of a solution. So everybody's kind of more individually focused now, right? Our interests are more atomized. But, like, I wonder if it'd be a great time for players to pick their own teams. I know that's an old thing I've talked about a lot, but by the time LeBron's a Laker, like, I think Lakers fans feel a lot better about that version of LeBron than the one that, you know, wanted to go play for Miami, but ended up, whatever.
Right.
And I feel like if we abolished the draft now, you still have a salary cap, you can still have some competitive balance. Like, now it might help. Might be,
I,
like,
think so.
Jokic is a nugget. Like, he's our guy.
Because he chose us, right? Like, he chose us. You're honest. I mean, we've been saying abolish the draft for a billion years. I mean, we should. I like it. Let's do it. Because if they choose, then you know, well, they chose you. I like it. I'm in. So sign them up.
If we're both in, it just becomes a law, right? Is that?
Well, once we decide, that's it. It's over.
Yeah.
Adam, sending him an email right now.
All right. We have, like, 2 minutes left. You have any last parting thoughts?
I think Phillies, Sixers, Hawks. Yeah, it's probably over. I just think that. The Sixers are a different level of defense than the Knicks are. Just vastly different. Superior, longer, and just better. And not having DeAndre Hunter really matters for Atlanta. So I think that series is over. I think Clippers Jazz might go long. I got a feeling the Clippers are going to win game two tonight. So at a minimum, it's going six, which is, like, if you're a Suns fan, great news. Please go as long as you want. And then Bucks Nets right now is a toss-up. Who knows? I have no idea.
You know, thinking a little bit, is that whole, like, you know, the Bucks didn't get Bogdanovich thing that happened. Suddenly now that he's, like, you know, hitting all these shots for Atlanta, part of me is like, oh, they could have really used him.
That's why we wanted that guy. Because
now that Pinto's out, I'm like, yeah, oh, that would have been really good.
Sorry, it didn't work out for you guys. Oh, and then just really quick, an appreciation for one of my favorite players in the league, Chris Paul, the point guard. No, this is year, 15 or something like that? Only a second conference finals, which underscores what I've said forever, and Henry knows this. It's fucking hard to win in this league, guys. Really, really, really hard. So celebrate this man for getting to a second conference finals, and maybe an NBA Finals for the first time in his career.
I mean, 538 says he's the favorite now.
Right? They do?
Yeah. No, it's great. Tiny players doing well. We got to celebrate that.
Yes. He is a tiny player in a land of giants.
All right. Thank you, Gerard. Thank you, Judy. See everybody.
Okay, guys.